Corky, a man escaped.
What?
That's right. A man escaped. This is not a drill. Call Rover. Bring the prisoner back. A man escaped. That is the film we will be talking about today on Cannon Fodder, your new favorite podcast with Dan and Corky. I'm film critic Daniel Barnes. With me, as always, my good friend, fellow cinephile, all around just great guy, Corky McDonald.
Hello, beautiful people.
Corky, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, my man?
I'm hanging in there. I'm sick again. I think I'm just going to be sick for the rest of my life. It's just something I'm just going to... There's one of those, you know, one of those decade-long colds that everyone's talking about.
I've heard about those.
Yeah, it'll happen. This is weird because I spend almost all my time by myself. I like work here at home and don't go anywhere, and I've never met anyone or talked to anyone. I don't know how the germs are getting to me. Corky, before we get into A Man Escaped.
What? Again?
Yes. Well, still, we haven't talked about it yet.
Okay, same guy.
This is the part of the show where we just chat, and I ask you, Corky, because you're the kind of guy, you've always got something stuck in your craw. So this is a segment we call Corky, What You Got in Your Craw?
Dan, let me tell you what peels my paint this week. I'm just going to shoot you straight right now.
Bring it to me. No filter.
It's about time we talked about restaurants that don't leave mints out on the counter where you pay.
Oof, he's got a mint in his craw, folks. Buddy, it's refreshing, but it's annoying to have in your craw.
It is. It smells great.
It's fantastic. Your breath is just, it's delightful.
Yeah. That's what peeling my paint this week.
That's great.
Up your budget, folks. It's $1.25 for a bag of them. They're delightful.
You're not asking for some kind of like specialty mints or anything like that. It doesn't need to be covered in chocolate or anything like that.
It doesn't even need to be a mint. It could be a hard candy.
Right? Exactly. Not even the hard candy. Dum-dums? Anything?
Come on. If my conversation post-dinner doesn't involve rattling things against my teeth, I don't want it. This has been what peels my paint this week with Corky.
Love it. This segment is taken off. Everyone's talking about it. Corky, of course on this show, we're not just talking about what's in our craw or what isn't in our craw or what a craw is. We are tearing through the cinematic canon one random selection at a time. And last week, those pesky random number generator gods, those puckish bastards, they descended from the heavens. That was always their story. And bestowed us with A Man Escaped.
Again?
Yeah, well, this was still the first time.
Okay.
So, A Man Escaped, directed by one of the pillars of filmmaking, French or otherwise, the great Robert Bresson. Robert Bresson. I heard a quote that I thought was really interesting. I can't remember who said it, but it was that French cinema, the mother is Renoir and the father is Bresson. Renoir's got a big heart, and Bresson's kind of withholding and has a lot of a lot of rules. Dad, you know, dad's strict. Mom loves you. It's interesting. So this movie, it's number 95, tied for number 95 on the Sight and Sound Critics Top 250 list. That's where we're getting these picks. And it's interesting. We talked last week about in Ali Fear Eats the Soul about Rainer Werner Fassbinder made over 40 films in 13 years. And a lot are very well regarded, but only one of them made the Sight and Sound Top 250. Meanwhile, here's Robert Bresson. He made 13 films in 40 years, and he's got 5 on the Top 250. He just inverted it on Fassbinder. He's a little dipsy doodle on Fassbinder. He also has Alhazard, Balthazar, Pickpocket, L'Argent, and Mouchette, which I think would be my personal favorite. And, of course, like I said, A Man Escaped.
I've heard of Pickpocket. That's the one I've heard of.
Pickpocket, another great film, kind of a piece with this one. Diary of a Country Priest is another.
Oh, I've heard of that one too.
Another one of his big ones.
And it looks like Steve Largent, the biopic about my favorite Seahawks wide receiver.
Weird departure for him. No one saw that coming. No one knew the secret life of Robert Bresson, rabid Seahawks super fan. No one knew. Corky, today's film, A Man Escaped, it's the story of a member of the French Resistance who's been imprisoned. in a hellhole in Lyon, but he is determined to escape. It's based on a real person, André Devigny, who escaped Montluc prison in Lyon in 1943. But it's also heavily influenced by writer-director Bresson's own experiences. He was a prisoner of war during World War II as a soldier, and as well as his views on religion. It's really his most personal movie and probably the most like striking expression of his aesthetic, which is often described as ascetic. He's got an ascetic aesthetic. Hey, he's having a blast. He's got an ascetic aesthetic. And what we mean by that, you know, ascetic, no frills, no fakery. He's not going to indulge you. There's a stylistic self-discipline that often takes on a religious undertone, even if it's not explicitly religious, but it is explicitly religious here and obviously in Diary of a Country Priest, other films. Kind of think of it like a monk who would pray and fast and deny himself things to get closer to God. Bresson's films exhibit that sort of purity that brings them closer to that kind of transcendence. And of course, our old buddy Paul Schrader, Quirky, he's written extensively about Bresson's work. Just a little connection back to our Dear Daniel, and maybe ahead to future Paul Schrader movies, as he made a few pretty damn good ones. But in his book, Transcendental Style and Film, Ozu Bresson Dreyer, he wrote a lot about that. And obviously, it greatly influenced several of his films, especially this recent run with First Reformed and The Card Counter. And he's a big Bresson fan. And Man Escape, like I said, it's probably the purest of his dozen or so very pure films. There's not a shot. There's not a cut. There's not a camera movement in this movie that doesn't have some kind of a purpose. Nothing's there to be there. Nothing's there to show off. He's not trying to distract you or divert you or mollify you or coddle you or mollycoddle you, for that matter. He won't do any of those things, which is not to suggest he's doing nothing, but that he's a very exacting in the films he wants to make, how he wants to make them, how he wants to present them, and that's why he only made about 13, as I said, features in 40 years. But Quirky, let's bring it back home. Here we are. We're in 2024. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year, my man.
And modern filmmaking, not just filmmaking, but TV, commercials, YouTube, social media, pretty much all of the media that we consume now, new media, we fully expect them to coddle us, to distract us, to pander to us, to mollify us, to show off, to like do anything to just try to hang on to our attention while we're have one eye on our phones. And in that kind of context, Bresson can be kind of a shock to the system. It's like if you eat fast food every single day and then suddenly like, you know what? No fast food, just kale smoothies. That's great. That's a great step in the right direction. It's not going to go down so well at first. You might just be like, your body might reject it like at first, you know? So let me ask you, Quirky, I assume you're not super well-versed in the filmography of Robert Bresson before Man Escaped. So how did you feel about Man Escaped? Did it hold your attention? Was the process, this sort of process and this painstaking process that Bresson and this kind of emotion and this reticence, this, I guess, the asceticism, you know, how did that work for you?
I think you could not put together a film more tailor-made for my taste, for my liking.
Awesome.
The asceticism is what I thoroughly enjoyed about this film. There was not, like you say, a wasted shot. Not even wasted. I don't want to be pejorative with any of this. There wasn't an unnecessary, something that didn't serve the scene. And that's all it is. It's a series of scenes dissolving into other scenes. Scenes dissolving into other scenes.
Held together by this narration. Omnipresent narration.
Very quiet.
Very quiet, very simple, and again, it's no flowery, no poetry. This is straight, strict prose.
And even like how you say, like a modern audience is expect mollycoddling, hand holding, a little bit of spoon feeding, glitz, whatever. Even an establishing shot, like you just you're trained to expect to see the outside of the house that you're going to see the inside of the house shot in. None of that. There's nothing. It's just what he is doing to it's about a man who gets taken to prison and his sole focus is not to be broken and to lift up others around him and then break himself out of prison. And that is what every scene is about. And every scene just, like I said, dissolves into the next scene. And it's the process of getting there, getting from A to B.
Yeah.
I, I've impressed all our listeners before with how much I like old time radio. And, you know, I get letters from everybody just saying, you're so cool. That is the coolest hobby and habit.
It's huge.
Right.
The kids love it.
It's Gen Alpha. Generation Alpha is really bringing it back.
They called it TikTok because they like old-timey clocks.
That's it, right?
That's what that was. It started as a grandfather clock appreciation platform.
But this was like that for me, even though it's a very visual movie and it's beautifully shot and well told. It reminded me of that because it was paced that way. It drops you right in. Mm-hmm. Like you don't know why this man is in a car. You don't get why he wants to escape so bad. You don't know who he's with. None of that. You just have to watch and get the gist. And it's beautifully done.
I fully agree. I mean, some absolute great points. I would just say, like, his Fontaine, this is our hero, our prisoner, the man who escaped. I don't even think he's necessarily in it to inspire others. That happens. But I think it's really like he is so singularly focused like on like how do I escape? And he's kind of like perplexed that other people aren't doing this as well in a way, you know, like, but it's not in a way that like he doesn't give up on other people. He doesn't like step on other prisoners' backs or anything like that. He's not selfish exactly, but I think it's just like from the exact moment, like you said, that we see him, like there's the shot of his hands and his hands just keep tensing up. Am I going to reach for the door? I'm going to reach for the door. He's in a car. It's slowing down. It's speeding up. It's slowing down. We don't see any of this. We just hear it all through the noises. And he is just waiting for his chance, right? And the first second he gets a chance, he takes it. We don't even see what happens. We just hear gunfires. The prisoner next to him has no reaction.
Passive,
like this is just how like he's just the people around him have really given up, right? Yeah. But he does it. It takes 3 seconds to apprehend him and bring him back. Like it's that. It was that hopeless of an attempt. And he's being returned from an escape attempt.
Yes.
As this is happening, right? But this sets the tone is like, escape isn't possible. It wasn't possible from a car.
Yeah.
Right. How is it going to be possible when you're locked in a cell, which is inside of a building, which is inside of a fortress, which is inside of another wall, which has guards and all over the place?
Even when your escape has made it crystal or open the avenue for the others to escape because you outnumber these people and they just don't take it.
They don't do anything.
And that was kind of what I was.
No gesture.
I was saying he was inspiring to others because he never gave in. Like all the others had given in. He never gave in. Even when they would talk about it, you're crazy. Don't do this. He would be like, what else is there to do? I can't give up.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he's almost none of his fellow prisoners think it's possible. They eventually come to kind of support him and rally around him.
Sure.
But we have this kind of side story of the old man who's in the cell next to Fontaine. So Fontaine, as soon as he gets in the cell, even before he's in his permanent cell, when he's just in the kind of holding cell, he's looking at what are the dimensions of this cell? What's here? How do I get out? What do I use? What can I do? But when he gets to this cell, the prisoners have this communication of just tap, 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 tapping on the wall. Tap, 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 tap. They could even kind of tap in code.
Yeah.
They could have just detailed conversations just with tap, tap, tap. But when he gets there, he taps and the old man doesn't tap back.
Right.
That's like completely lost hope. Like I have nothing to even communicate. I won't even give you the hope.
Yeah.
That there's another person in here who might like be able to help you or do something for you in any way. And that's just like they're dead, but they're still walking around. Like the old man, he can't even commit suicide. He attempts to commit suicide and it fails. I don't think that's Fontaine's goal is not like to inspire the other prisoners, but through his determination, his purity, his patience, he does inspire others, right?
And his sacrifice.
And that
the old man
very
comes around when he falls and faints out in the courtyard carrying his slop bucket. Fontaine is the one who comes and helps him.
Yes.
And that opens up the old man to actually, you know, talking to him.
A little bit of humanity. And that's what this is all about, really, is like kind of how in this situation, like this prison's a living hell. Like it is hell.
And they all know it's temporary. They all know we are just waiting to be hung or shot.
Waiting for the execution to come down. This is all just, you know, and so many of them seem to be there for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Fontaine, we find out, is there because he, you know, blew up a bridge. So he's like a real celebrity here. No one else is there because, like, of a mistake, like, yeah, a misunderstanding, or because, like, his wife turned him in.
They're executing people over having pencils. Like, yes, if you have a pencil in your cell, they're going to execute you. So Fontaine knows it's not going to go right for me. This is not.
No.
I can't talk my way out of the bridge I blew up.
Yeah. But, you know, in that situation where it's just you, your one thing activity of the day is to empty your slop bucket and then you go back to your cell. Yeah. And in that, how do you, like, stay a human being? And how do you stay a human being who is, like, worthy of grace and worthy of God, you know? And that's where I think, like, the religious aspect comes in. Obviously, he talks to a pastor and to a priest who are in there with him. And he's not a believer, though, because he's sort of a believer in himself. But I think that, like, through that, like, self-sacrifice, through that, like, kind of purity of his purpose, and through never giving up, I think he does inspire people in that same way that, like,
yeah,
that, you know, Christ and that religion would inspire people.
I think the only thing that he believes in bigger is towards the end, you see that he really cares about France, or at least, yeah, you know, fighting back. And he chastises Jost, who comes to reside with him, because he's wearing some German fatigues and some French fatigues. And he's right, like, he can't even, you're probably filled with lice and dirty because you are the type who would wear a German jacket. I don't care if you're cold.
Yeah.
If you wear a German jacket, that's a problem. Fontaine wears the same bloody shirt that he got beat down in from the day he got there,
In the very first sequence of the movie, and he does not change that shirt. It's just covered in his blood the entire time, which is why I'm saying, like, this movie, it's really brutal. Like, it is really brutal, yeah, but it's not exploitative.
Right.
And it's not, like, gross or anything like that. It's not, like, a stomach turning in like, a visceral sort of a way, but it is in, like, a holy fuck, like, these are such dehumanizing,
yeah,
conditions that they're living through. And I guess, you know, if we haven't made it super clear, this is, obviously, it's World War II, it's Nazi-occupied France in Lyon, Hotel Terminus, Klaus Barbie. I mean, this is,
yeah,
these are bad times.
Yeah.
Bad times. Yeah, really bad. but yeah, so once he gets into his permanent prison, this is really, it's all about just getting out. It's all about the process of getting out. And this is the whole movie here, really, is like this patience that is shown by Fontaine, but also the patience that's shown by Bresson. To just stick with it, this long process, finding the right spoon, needs to be the right metal, filing it down, peeling away tiny little pieces of the door, cleaning up the shavings every night, like doing this, and that's just to get outside the cell.
Yeah.
That's just right. The cell, and that's right. Like the first, like, third to first half of the movie is just trying to get out of the cell. Once you get out of the cell, then you got to get out of the building. You got to get over a series of walls. There's watch guards. There's sentries. There's what do you call the big post where they're elevated?
Sentry towers?
Yeah, towers, watchtowers. Yeah, it's impossible, but he painstakingly completes this first step of just kind of filing away pieces of the door so that it comes apart in these three little pieces. He can get out, and the first thing he does is he goes and he taps on the cell of the person next to him, and that gives him that little bit of hope.
Yeah, and everybody's aware of what he's doing.
Yes,
you don't
because
know
they can't not be.
Yeah, exactly. He has accomplices who look out. You know, they act as guards for him. Will whistle or cough when somebody's coming, that kind of stuff. But he is alone in his cell, and it's just Fontaine for 75% of the movie. Single shots on Fontaine doing things that are going to get him out of the prison, or him narrating, which yes. is
get him out or get him killed.
Yeah,
because
it's one of the same.
Any sound, any gesture, anything. Well, I mean, it's yeah. Those are his two preferred, you know, methods, right? Like, he actually says in the first moment he thought he was going to be executed right away, and he almost would have preferred it rather than kind of sitting in this shitty cell and waiting for execution a few days later. But yeah. He does eventually get moved to the permanent housing. Corky A movie you probably haven't seen because it just came out, but one of my favorite movies of the year, Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest.
I keep hearing about this movie.
Yeah, so it's a film. It's about the real life man and his wife, a man who ran Auschwitz and his wife who lived in this kind of idyllic little home right next to Auschwitz while it was in full production. In that film, and Jonathan Glazer talked about this, so we're entirely focused on what's happening in this kind of house and in this yard with this family and how they're trying to kind of create this lovely life as, like, obviously the most horrible thing that's ever happened in the history of the world is happening just right outside their door. And in that film, Jonathan Glazer talked about how there's the film that we're seeing, and then there's another film that's happening completely off screen, which is just the sounds that we're hearing.
Yeah.
And Zone of Interest, it's omnipresent sounds because you can hear the machinery chugging all the time. You can hear machine gun fire in the distance. You can hear people shouting. You can hear trains pulling up and pulling away. And while it's not as... Zone of Interest is more severe than what's going on here and more kind of art filmy, I would say. It's very similar to what's happening in A Man Escaped, because so much of what is happening off screen, and that's where all the tension's coming in from, is because we hear these sounds. Even as I said in that first scene, we don't see the car speeding up and slowing down. We just hear it speeding up and slowing down. And when it slows down, we see the hand kind of move towards the door a little bit, right?
And it's a beautiful little juxtaposition of the hand that's on the stick shift slowing down, speeding up, slowing down, yeah. And his hand reaching for the door, coming back, reaching for the door, coming back. And you're right, the sounds of it, it almost, and you want to fill that gap.
There is this whole other movie, like Zone of Interest, that's happening off screen because we keep hearing sounds of machine gun. Yes. We hear sounds of the ding ding of some trolley. Like life is just kind of going on while all of this in Lyon, while all of this is happening. And as he's in the cell, he's scraping, scraping, scraping away. He's filing down. He's trying to move. But I mean, all the prisoners can hear him, but he hears the guards. Anytime he hears footsteps on the stone prints, he knows it's time to put away. So sound is dangerous. Sound is like saving him. There's all this tension that is created by the sound happening off screen.
Beautiful, yes. And it's every tool he uses, he has to set down carefully. Any clink of metal, any jostling is going to alert somebody to some activity. And it's not just what's in his cell. It's when he's up and exploring and walking around. He teaches Yost how to walk heel toe very carefully because they don't want to make the noise. They don't know the guards' routines. They don't know what are normal sounds. If someone's just sitting there smoking and they're there for 10 minutes or they're there for an hour and a half, you know? Oh, man. So good. Yeah. I wanted to talk about the sound because I saw that Amadeus, I don't know how they got him, but he agreed to do the soundtrack. There's some Mozart music in there. And I honestly, after watching, I was like, I couldn't place where it was. Because to me, it felt like there was no, almost the whole movie is just, like you say, the sounds. It's just, that's filling in the soundtrack. The prison actually being a functional prison,
I think it's mainly just at the beginning and ending.
Is it
the
okay?
Where the any of the
yeah, I did I did remember it at the ending, but through the movie I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, no, I mean that's it. It's very natural, and that naturalism and that kind of lack of. At the very beginning, there's a little crawl signed by Robert Bresson that says, "The following is his true story. I present it as it happened without adornment."
Yeah.
And that's the aesthetic without adornment.
Yeah.
You know, that's beautiful. the real key phrase there, which is that, you know, I'm not going to pretty it up and I'm not going to do things that, seem fake or false, either in the story or in the filmmaking and then also in the acting too. So Bresson had this kind of theory, personal theory, where he preferred the word model over actor. He didn't like actors. That was not his style. So which is why he used non-professionals mostly, because again, he's kind of looking for a certain face or a certain kind of feeling out of them. But then he also had this habit of he would just run lines with them over and over and over and over again, just on and on. And we're just running, let's try it again, try it again, try it again, until he has drained every ounce of emotional fraudulence from that performance. Again, without adornment. There's no acting to get between you and the character on screen, right? No. There's not that filter, which is, you know, which is what great actors do, right? Yeah. So I mean, there's a whole other argument to the contrary, right? This isn't for everyone, but for the cinema of Bresson, he wanted truth. And, you know, he wasn't getting truth from a really skilled actor who could, you know, play this part, but could do what something of that actor would be in there. And he didn't want any of that. He didn't want acting. He wanted a model. And it's a great performance by Fontaine. It's kind of interesting because, like,
a first timer.
Yeah. Francois Letellier, I believe was his name. He's not like a hard man. He's certainly not a large man. He's very scrawny.
He looks like a young Alan Alda.
He really does. Yes. Yeah. He has this kind of look like in a previous life, you know, maybe he was like an intellectual, not really like a working class type, right, or something like that. But he is he's just so determined. And as you said, it's right before we get to the final sequence, we're all like, there's just this long, the second act is a lot of like, is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? Is he going to do it? Can he do it? Can he do it? Should he do it now? No, he needs to wait some more. No, do wait more, wait more, wait more. You got to have another thing. One of the other prisoners makes a kind of rash escape, fails, but gives him some more information, kind of moves him.
Yeah.
And then right before it, he's ready to go, and then he gets his cellmate.
Yeah.
Some new kid. And he actually wonders, would I have the courage to kill this kid in cold blood? I mean, that's part of the escape is this kid. And there's a really tense scene where he tells him, and like, it's not said,
no,
but it's understood, like,
you're coming or you're dying. Yeah.
Like, or we're doing this right here and now, you know, like
the fact that I told you, it made that choice for you.
We're now partners. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's very tense, but quirky. Now we get into the real tense part of the movie, because now we're at the actual escape.
God, I loved it.
I mean, and again, you want to talk about sounds, silence, things happening off screen. I mean, it's just a masterclass.
I want to talk about the way it's shot.
Yes.
Earlier I used beautiful. I wouldn't say that in the 9 times out of 10, when I say beautiful, I'm talking about some stunning visuals or a beautiful framed shot. What I mean beautiful is that everything is of sole purpose. It is the most claustrophobic shot selection throughout. Well, Fontaine's in, I think, every scene. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning, I'm like watching. I'm like, oh, they're really riding in a car right now. This is not a drop screen. This is not just jostling, you know, actors like that. And because of that, you can't see full body of Fontaine. I don't think you ever see his complete body until the last scene when you see him and Yost walking away. Mm. And he's truly now free. He's out of his box.
Yes.
The camera is part of the complicity of holding this man contained. He has escaped. And it's so well done.
Yeah, because it's a great point.
Yeah. The places he has to fit through, the hallways he has to skulk around. He's
wiry strong.
Well, yeah, wiry strong guy. Yeah, exactly. So he can take up some space, but he's never allowed to fully be full him until the very end when he's escaped. It's just so well.
Yeah, and that's probably the most ostentatious like camera move in the movie happens during that last shot where they're walking off as well. The camera kind of like makes a big move to kind of swoop around and follow them as they're walking away, almost as though like the camera has also been freed, you know, like as the audience, like the aesthetic has been freed as well.
It also reminded me of the end of Bicycle Thieves, but in a very different way, how the father and son join the swarm of people walking away. These two walk into the fog. Their story is now obscured. We don't know anything else.
They just disappear.
That is not the purpose of this movie. The purpose of the movie is to show a man escaping and his determination to do that. Now their story is something different.
Yeah. And spoiler alert. Oh, yeah. He escaped.
Spoiler alert for this 70-year-old movie.
The title's a big time spoiler.
No shit.
But yeah, that amazing final secret goes on for like 20 minutes or so. Oh, yeah. And there's a great touch where right before he leaves, like the last thing he does when he before he moves out of the cell, knocks on the door or knocks on the wall, and the old man knocks back. And we never go back. We never find, oh, and the old man, he was fine. No, like, no, we never find, we don't even find out if that, that one prisoner who made an escape was actually executed. It's assumed, but we don't ever actually find out. But it's just that touch of like, he's going to go to sleep tonight with a little bit of hope instead of like no hope and just feeling death. Yeah. You know, it's just that little something. But yeah, it's this whole scene, the noises, the gravel under their feet. They have to walk in their socks.
Yost forgetting, there's just almost ruining
Yost
their escape.
Yes. And then all of the waiting, they run into a watchman. They're stuck above him for hours. And there's a lot of inaction of like, can I act? Should I act?
Yeah.
He does several times. First of all, above the man, and then he finally shimmies down after several hours of waiting, and after the watchman change and a less devoted watchman actually like chills out a little bit, and hesitates again, and then for finally taking him out in what apparently is a very brutal way off screen with his bare hands, and then another noise. What is this squeak? Squeak. We just keep hearing this this little squeak happening, and more hesitating, more wondering, more waiting, more watching. It's just tension just keeps building and building and building, but again, just doing it all with what's there.
Yeah,
not with, you know, a great Bernard Herrmann score or sweeping camera shots or lots of really ostentatious angles. Just
no
with
character
what,
there to remind there. You how dangerous everything is. No, you don't need
stakes.
It's really
if we don't go now, we'll never. So finally, it turns out to be a bike, which causes more hesitating. Finally, this rope. He's been building this rope for like half of the movie, where it's just he's shredding any piece of material that he can possibly find, wrapping it around this wire so that he can just do a shimmy, a little 10-foot shimmy. But that's the difference between life and death. Will this rope hold? And it holds. And that's it. I mean, it's just like... it's beautiful because it's just like so much tension, and then he just does it, and it's like neat. Like we don't even stay back and watch Yost do it. It's like, all right, it worked.
And
it
blew me away. We get to that point, and they still don't know if it's going to work. But they're at this point of no return. They still don't know. He's got to test it, and he's thinking of all the different ways to put his weight on it without actually putting his weight on it.
Pretty brilliant. So they're out. That's it. And Yost says, if only my mother could see me now. And that's when the music swells up with some Mozart. And they, like you said, they disappear into the fog and they disappear into history. And that's our movie. A man escaped.
Hell yeah, he did. Actually, a man and a boy escaped.
That's true. A man and a young man escaped. He was 16.
Yeah, he had killed. So
fighting for two different armies at the same time.
Corky,
any final thoughts before we give our ratings?
We talked a little bit about the performance of the newcomer, Francois Letellier. We talked a little bit in the last one about Ollie Fearitz Stole, about a stripped down performance. And I said, I need an actor to give me a little bit of actory, right? Although I saw it a different way with this one. He was so stoic, so emotionless, of a single purpose, determined, didn't use his face to emote, only words and delivery, and that cadence he had during his narration. I thought it was a great performance, although I would kind of compare it to the performance of Ali in Ali Fearitz Stole, which I didn't care for. So... I guess I just got to backtrack a little bit that I don't need actory.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Also that I love that this guy directed Goodbye Emmanuel, a film I watched many times as a 14-year-old.
Directed
Goodbye Emmanuel with Sylvia Christel, the softcore porn.
Did Brisson
No, not
Brisson.
The guy, Letellier, he went on to make...
Francois Letellier directed Emmanuel. What?
Goodbye, Emmanuel. His son directed the two Transporter movies.
What? Oh yeah, Louis Letellier. Well,
he made a few. World, like, huh? I don't know if they're just softcore or they're just French, but I know Goodbye, Emmanuel is softcore.
Hey, 601. Right. Am I right? I didn't mention it at the beginning, but November 11th, 1956 was when A Man Escaped was originally released. So quirky for this film released in November 1956. Let's give our ratings just to remind everybody. We take these films, we're picking them from the Sight and Sound Critics Top 250, and we decide after each film, was it a sound selection by the critics, or was it a little slight? And if slight, what slighted movie not in the Sight and Sound Top 250 would we put in its place? Mm. Quirky, I put the question to you, my good sir, slight or sound?
Much like Bresson's filmmaking in this one, the emphasis is on sound, baby. This is a sound choice. Big time. Prime the cannons.
I concur. Put this one in the canon, because I declare it to be sound. Cannons away! Hark! I hear the cannons roar. Is it the king approaching?
Is it the king approaching?
Roar!
Oh.
All right.
I hear the cannons roar.
Oh, Radio Day's references. We'll never get tired of them.
That's what these two men thought about A Man Escaped. But what did you, you listening at home or wherever you're listening, think about A Man Escaped? Did you watch it with us? Had you seen it before? We would love to hear your take. Let us know. Contact us on Facebook and Instagram at Dear Daniel Pod and tell us what you thought. What we're going to do now is we're going to select our next movie using the random numerator generator gods.
Yeah, it's that time of the show, Corky. We put A Man Escaped in the canon. The cannons have roared. And now it's time to select the film that we will be reviewing on our next show. I've got my letterbox list. It's all numbered. I've got my random number generator. Please, random number generators, what will you bestow us with this week? Here I go, clicking. Ten.
Whoa.
That's a high number here. Number 10 on this list, Corky.
What if it's Blake Edwards 10?
Do you like to play?
Oh, it's war games? Okay.
Do you? I didn't say we were playing a game. I just asked if you like to play. And if you do like to play, do you have time to play? Because the movie we will be reviewing on our next episode is Playtime. Playtime by the French director. Yeah, we're staying in France. Hey, France, what's up, bruh? We're staying in France. Director and star Jacques Tati.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Jacques Tati. Yes, sort of a post-silent era silent comic, sort of. That's how he kind of started out. He has that kind of Chaplin-esque sort of a everyman kind of a thing going
Isn't
for him.
Isn't he who that guy was playing in The Artist?
No. Okay.
Then forget all about that.
He's a piece of garbage. Yes, Jacques Tati, French filmmaker. This one is probably his most famous film. Super, super ambitious. One of the most ambitious movies ever made. Playtime from 1967. Let's hear a little bit about the plot. Clumsy Monsieur Hulot. This was his character, Hulot. Monsieur Hulot's Holiday. He did Mon Oncle. This was a character that he did throughout it. He finds himself perplexed by the intimidating complexity of a gadget-filled Paris. He attempts to meet with a business contact, but soon becomes lost. His roundabout journey parallels that of an American tourist. Blah, 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 blah. Don't give away the whole plot. Here's the thing. Visually, this movie is going to blow your freaking mind. The sets, the choreography, the framing, the fact that there are jokes embedded within jokes within jokes, gags within gags within gags, all while having this like view of this sort of lost in translation sort of a thing of a tourist and a man. They don't speak the same language. They're circling around each other. It's chaotic. It's quirky. It's bizarre. It's a fascinating film, Quirky. Playtime. And that's what we will be talking about next week. You want to watch it along with us? You want to watch Playtime? Get a big TV. A lot of people will say don't watch this on anything but a big screen, but you know, yeah, I have a large fucking TV, all right? And I just stand extra close to it. You like that? It's on Criterion Channel, if you got it. It's also available on all your usual VOD rental services. It is 115 minutes long. It's the longest movie we've done yet. That's not even 2 hours. This is like, oh my God, will this movie ever end? Playtime, Corky.
My guard is up a little bit. I don't like Clouseau. I don't, the whole concept of a French bumbler.
Clouseau? Yeah. That's Hulot.
No, I know. Hulot. I'm just talking about Clouseau. Like that whole stereotype.
Not even within the same fucking universe.
It better be more than Mr. Heavyfoot.
French?
Okay.
Mr. Heavyfoot? That's
from Kids in the Hall. That was their take on French clumsy comedy. Mr. Heavyfoot goes to the movies. Mr. Heavyfoot is on the moon.
Oh, Corky. If you're not delighted by this movie, you're off the show. No, I'm just kidding. I hope you like it. It's been a million years since I've seen it. I remember having a positive but somewhat less ecstatic reaction. It's one of those movies I've been really excited to revisit ever since. It's been so long since I've seen it. So we'll really both be going
into
it fresh.
Just say, I'm going to shut up, Dan, because I'm going to talk right now. How much fun I'm having doing this. I have seen... No, I'm fucking serious, man. I've seen some of my new favorite movies since we started watching actual good movies and not reviewing the shit of the cinema world. I love talking.
I just like that you're telling me to shut the fuck up while you're talking. What the fuck?
I really had to get that out. I had to,
it's like... So Van Escaped sort of vibe coming out here. It's like a prisoner, just like really animal.
To let you know how much I enjoy talking with you about movies, I need you to shut the fuck up.
I am having a blast too. All right, listen, I'm going to slap the shit out of you. I'm having so much fucking fun right now. I'm having a blast too. I love it. This is like the highlight of my week, so. Having a blast, and I'm, you know, playtime, love it, hate it. It'll be a blast to talk about it with you. And I hope everybody else watches it, or if you have seen it, maybe you'll see it again, or maybe you'll just conjure memories in your mind.
All right. In the meantime, follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram for updates on this show and upcoming episodes of the Dare Daniel Podcast. Like us and rate us on your favorite podcast app. Please like, rate, share us, talk about us. That's the only way we get noticed in the algorithms. If you're interested in donating to the show, go to DearDaniel.com, click the donate button, or find support the show in the menu. For Cannon Fodder, I am the very deliriously happy Corky McDonald, because I just saw a movie that really spoke to me. This is my friend Daniel Barnes. Go ahead and say goodbye, Daniel.
Hey. Goodbye, Daniel. Hey, I'm Daniel Barnes, and until next time, when we will be discussing Jacques Tati's Playtime. Again, it's on Criterion Channel, and until then, save us a seat in the back row.